In the middle of July, the State Department of Environmental Conservation announced the return of spawning lake sturgeon to the Genesee River, which was hailed as an important milestone in the restoration of the water, which hadn't seen this happen in more than half a century. To better understand the significance of this announcement and take a look at bodies of water outside the Genesee River, we're joined by Dr. George Jackman, Senior Habitat Restoration Manager for Riverkeeper. Welcome to the show, George.
Glad to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
So for starters, can you explain, I guess, what a sturgeon is and why the return of their spawning in the Genesee River is such welcome news to the state?
Lake sturgeon, or this group of sturgeon, belong to an ancient group of primitive fishes that are confined to the northern hemisphere. And evolutionary lineage dates back hundreds of millions of years. So as a group, the sturgeons, also known as chondrasti, are considered one of the oldest species of bony fishes, which we also know as osteichthyes. And they retain cartilaginous skeleton with some degree of ossification. So it places them right between the elasmobranchs and the bony fishes. So they're an evolutionary linchpin. So despite flourishing since the age of dinosaurs, sturgeon as a group worldwide are globally imperiled and threatened with extinction to varying degrees. And, you know, to the uninformed person, who cares about sturgeon? But to a fish head like myself, or these fish have been around for up to 200 million years. They have a right to exist, and they're incredible fishes. So that's why they're really important. And this is just an incredible news.
You explain what has contributed, not just necessarily in New York, but around the world, to the dwindling number of lake sturgeon?
Yeah. When your eggs and form of reproduction become a delicacy, you're doomed. And then when most sturgeons are anadromous, or in this case, pathodromous, meaning that they spawn, they leave large bodies of water and spawn in creeks and bays. Those are the same areas where humans have settled most densely on the planet. And we have a habit of dominating our waterways and then using them as sewers and sources of pollution. So we've dammed the rivers, we've altered the rivers, straightened them, channelized them. Then we hunted them down to the very edge of extinction for their caviar. It was called black gold in the 1880s. And by the 1900s, at least in the United States or in New York State, all three of our sturgeon species. We're blessed in New York to have three different species. You have the lake sturgeon, the Atlantic sturgeon, and the short-nosed sturgeon. Every one of them was hunted to the brink of extinction because we like to eat their eggs on crackers. And that's just appallingly sad.
Well, it's interesting to hear you explain the root of their numbers dwindling, because I think when most listeners hear about a plant or animal that's at the verge of extinction or has seen its numbers dwindle, we assume it has to do with actions that have affected their environment. Is that not so much the case here? Is it really primarily that their eggs in particular are such a desirable food that they're going out of style because of that?
Well, it's both. It's really, it's habitat and hunting, or, over harvest, mm-hmm. over exploitation. It's really both. So when you reduce or limit their ability to reproduce, and a lot of these fish, they would just hold out. The problem is it's biological too, because they're long-lived species. They can live to be 80. Oh, the females could live to be up to, I believe it's as high as 150 years old. But they don't start maturing until about 20 years old. And then they reproduce about every 3 to 5 years after that, because it takes a lot of their energy out of them. And so when they're long-lived species that are slow-growing and late-maturing, and then you harvest them for their eggs, you really imperil them. And then when you attack their habitat by damming rivers, just unadulterated pollutants entering where their eggs are laid, or channelizing, or straightening rivers, you change their habitat that they require for spawning.
So back in 2003, the State Department of Environmental Conservation began stocking the Genesee River with lake sturgeon, and then fast forward to this past May, and a field crew nets a 61-inch, nearly 70-pound female lake sturgeon in the water there. Is that what it takes to get to this point, a concentrated effort of restocking and just a long period of time to get to the point where we can start to see some positive signs?
Yeah, it takes their generational time to 20 years. So we're right where we expected to be with that. It's almost 20 years later since it started, and this is the fruits of their labors for their stocking. It's terrific news. If you think about sturgeon, this is exciting news that it's working. The recovery is working, and they're on target. They're on track to for a lot of their places to eventually recover. So there are goals to have them removed from the imperiled status. And this shows that the efforts are actually working.
In case you're just joining us, we're talking with Riverkeepers Senior Habitat Restoration Manager, Dr. George Jackman, about the state's announcement of the resurgence of lake sturgeon in the Genesee River and considering their future around the state more broadly. So your focus is centralized in the Hudson Valley region. What are you working on there? What's your main topic of interest?
I work on habitat restoration, and most specifically dam removal. And what I work on is trying to restore habitat for our migratory fishes, like river herring and American eel, and even lamprey. Lamprey get a bad name because of they're considered invasive in the Great Lakes. But in the Hudson Valley, they're native. They belong here. They're part of our ecosystem, and they're hardly a threat.
What's an example of lamprey?
It's an eel-like creature. It's a Mixini is the classification. It's related to hagfishes, and they preceded her. They're a precursor to vertebrates, another ancient species. And I happen to love migratory species and just how they navigate in these seemingly, how do they navigate? And that's what makes sturgeon really incredible, is they have what's called an ampullae of Lorenzini, and they can detect electrical impulses in the water. And much like a shark, if you were to thrash around, they can detect these things, or they can detect biochemical changes, minute amounts of electrical charge. And they also can geolocate themselves or orient themselves in order to migrate. Well, which is an amazing question. How do migratory fish orient themselves? So they have to have like a built-in map and compass, and they do. And that's what I just find absolutely fascinating about migratory fishes.
When you're doing this work, are you, I guess, a man on an island, or is this something where there's a partnership, say, with the state Department of Environmental Conservation or, say, federal officials?
Well, it's really we're working with the state. We worked in conjunction with the state to remove three dams. Actually, in 2016, we removed a dam on the Wineskill in Troy. We worked with the state and the city of Troy to remove an 85-year-old barrier. And within 5 days, the timing just was perfect. It was the spawning season. Within 5 days of removal of that barrier, the river herring moved back into that creek and were able to spawn once again. They were blocked for 85 years, and they had the wherewithal to follow that moving water and head upstream and spawn. That is, we're contributing to the hand of God by working. We're working with God by doing that. We're opening up their ancestral spawning grounds. It's really God's work. And we, in this past fall, we removed two dams, one in Westchester and one in Orange County, and we found a wild trout that moved in from the Hudson where the dam once stood. For 300 years, a dam stood at that site, and we're now having fish move back into that creek. That's extraordinary. And so many of these creatures, these migratory fish, they're down anywhere up to 99 percentiles from pre-contact periods, or, you know, from the baseline of what we once knew of recorded history. You know, people said they could walk on the backs of fish. They're down 99 percentile. We have to work just as hard as we can to restore these fish, you know, whether out in the ocean from protect them from industrial fishing, or give them back their spawning, their ancestral spawning habitat.
Does the state's commitment to this issue match your fervor?
Oh, absolutely. The state is on board, and they actually supplied the grants to help remove remove these dams. And so we're kind of working with the state. We're using state funds to remove these dams, and we're looking for ecological opportunities, much like what they're doing on the Genesee River. Wherever we can give them a helping hand, we're trying. You know, it's by the hand of man that these fishes were brought so low, and it is only by the hand of man that they will recover.
Well, we've been speaking with Dr. George Jackman. He's a senior habitat restoration manager for Riverkeeper. Dr. Jackman, thank you so much for making the time. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure. I'm pleased to be on this show.
Support for the Capitol Press Room is provided by New York State United Teachers, a union of professionals in education, human services, and healthcare.